Here we go. This is it. You ready? Welcome to Highway Diary, episode 268, with my very special guest, Luke Rothschild.
Thanks for having me. 268?
268.
That's a lot.
I know. We've done a lot.
You go in order? That started at 0,
correct.
0,
it started 1. At 1, yes.
And went up to all the way.
268.
Wow, here we are.
Speaking of episodes, episode 25 of John McGinley's YouTube channel is the first time I ever saw Luke Rothschild.
Yeah?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up, man? What's going on?
What did you do? To Sunima! What did you do? This is how you treat our women, isn't it? You don't give a shit.
So I put her in a box!
Alright, let's go. You put her arms in there,
she's long arms.
And now you're gonna put her torso here. You have to turn yourself in.
On John McGinley's YouTube channel.
You were Johnny, he had an episode called Johnny the Neighbor.
Yeah, I know that episode, I was in that episode.
And then, what was your motivation?
For doing it?
What did John McGinley tell you before he said action?
Nothing. He doesn't really have any input to give. He's a weird director in that way. He says just do something, you know? And then he action.
And then there's a camera in your face.
And there's a camera in your face.
So we're both here and go.
Huge deranged man just like fucking right up in you.
Deranged. That's an interesting word.
You have to turn yourself.
You wouldn't use that word to describe John McGinley?
I've had very few interactions with John McGinley, but one of them was he asked me to do one of his videos, and then I watched the one you were in, and then I was like, no thank you.
Well, I'm glad I could turn you off to his art.
I like John McGinley, but I think he does a very, Tim and Eric style of non-sequitur humor. And I was like, I won't do anything that doesn't have context.
Can you describe the word Tim and Eric? Can you use it in a sentence?
Tim and Eric? Tim and Eric, the Tim and Eric show. Awesome
show. I thought that was a word.
No, there's a show on Cartoon Network called Tim and Eric Awesome Show. And it would just
So you mean it's too nonsensical, the humor?
I mean, it's like I'm in, you know, a lot of John McGinley's videos are him in the woods with a pink wig on. And you're supposed to, you know, fill in the blank from the rest.
You know? You're not sure if you should fap to it or fucking, you know, be disgusted.
He also, when I watch him do stand-up, he has, a series of meltdowns where he's just gonna... It's more of a cry for help where he's like, I'm gonna commit suicide.
Yeah, you're really not sure after you watch him. You're not sure if he's crying for help or if he's, It's a cry for help.
I'm not sure how mentally stable he is, you know?
This is a guy that drove a car into his parents' house over a fight, you know? So if that doesn't drip mental stability...
What kind of car was it? Was it a sweet Porsche?
It was a Honda. It was a Honda.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you go to college? Where did you grow up?
Where'd you come up with these questions?
I wrote them down.
You thought about these all night? I went to college, I wasted money at Iona College, and I dropped out.
Upstate New York, right?
That's mid-state New York. Right near the city, but it's far enough from the city to call it upstate, I suppose. But, I did the college thing there, which is pretty much anything except go to college, and learned my lesson.
So, you kind of, dropped out, and then you're like, oh, shit, I thought this was a party.
Yeah, I realized I could have partied for a lot cheaper. Yeah, there was a lot cheaper parties to go to.
With tuition, it's like, oh, I was just more into the house party type of thing.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I wanted to party with preppy, annoying white girls. You know, that grew up in fucking Connecticut.
That's where you're from, Connecticut?
No, that's where a vast majority of the whores from that school grew up. Connecticut. I don't know about Connecticut, but it must be a breeding ground for whores.
It's like a yuppie factory.
Yeah.
Even the toll bridges are slat, 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 as your Easy Pass goes.
It is something to behold.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in a little town called Ossining, New York. You know?
Sounds kind of German.
There's a prison there on one side of town.
How do you spell that? Ossining?
Ossining. O-S-S-I-N-I-N-G.
O-S-S. Interesting. Yep.
So pretty much the whole town is just the further away you are from the prison, the better off you are. Yeah? That's the whole dynamic of the town.
Anyone escape from Ossining?
From Ossining? I mean, I escaped from Ossining.
I mean,
you mean
prison.
The prison?
Yeah.
I sure hope. That was always my biggest fear. I had a friend who lived really close to the prison growing up, and I'd go sleep there. But I'd always have nightmares of people coming and taking me. As if their first thought after they escaped to prison was like, I gotta go find myself a 9-year-old boy to steal. Yeah?
Well, I mean, you know, you're living in the shadow of this big castle with barbed wire, you know?
That's right.
So after college, How far did you get? Did you get to your sophomore year?
I guess you could say I got to my junior year. Credits wise, it was probably a sophomore year.
You were there 3 years, and not, you know, not all the classes.
Yeah, when I started going there, I was like, I'm gonna earn myself a what you call one of them. The
bachelor's degree?
No. Yeah, I couldn't even think of the
yuppie
word.
Whore.
That's how far away I am from getting one. No, I was going to get myself one of them scholarships in order to go to school for cheaper, but I never achieved a scholarship, so by my third year, I was out of money. My parents were on the street, just drained. My dad was selling his last pair of jeans. He only wears shorts now.
That's unusual for a Rothschild. Well, how long did you start doing comedy? Did you do comedy in college?
I feel like if you start comedy in college, you're kind of cheating yourself, right? Because you're supposed to start comedy when you are a homeless piece of shit that just robbed a convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like,
because you have more things to say. You've lived life.
Yeah. What the fuck is a college kid gonna say? You know,
right,
I just skipped class today. Oh, that's not funny.
Right.
That's just tragic. You're wasting your parents' money. After the fact, though.
I started in high school. How dare
you? Started in high school.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing it?
Too long. Since
fuck
I was 16,
all these questions.
I'm 34.
Jesus.
You dropped 3 specials. Anyway, check out my specials.
Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Conspiracies and Dick Jokes, Fart Porn and Beer Halls, and It's a Medical Device are available now on YouTube.
Do you think that your titles are holding you back?
A lot. You know, they didn't make it on Amazon Prime.
No?
I'll tell you that. Amazon Prime sent me an email in no uncertain terms saying, this is massively offensive. We're not going to publish this.
What's the most exciting show you've ever done?
What do you mean?
What's the biggest show you've ever done?
Yeah, probably. So on that tour, when I was in Houston, Texas, I did a place called The Saloon in Houston.
Okay.
And I headlined for like 35 minutes. And I like, no, maybe 40. And I like killed the first 20. And then I told one joke. And then I looked at my notes, and then the audience just started, like, just for a second. I did 20 minutes of comedy. I looked down at my notes, and a lot of the audience started leaving.
Really?
And it was very discouraging.
That's ridiculous.
So, like, for 20 minutes, I killed, and then I looked down at my notes real quick, and then I was like, all right, which one should I do? And then everyone was like,
when
oh, he doesn't have it.
You think of all the seasoned comics that take notes on stage. That's like, it's like all of them.
And I had, like, outline. I was just like, oh, okay, and this one, go. And then I would do it, and they were, I don't know. Also, I was pretty offensive, and there were some church ladies in there, and I think they were kind of tired of me after. They like the poop jokes, but then I have a joke about, you know, God made us, God said, you can't be gay, and he put, but then he made a prostate, which is like a clitoris in your butt, and then he's like, don't be gay. It's like, that's your whole plan? But God, how's my prostate work? He's like, well, if you get fisted real hard or hard dick goes in your ass and uppercuts your prostate over and over, you come everywhere. Don't be gay. And it's like, what?
What?
So then
is
the
that
church
what happens?
I read this on a textbook. Because
I feel like the prostate helps with shitting. Isn't that correct? It doesn't just help with orgasming in your butt.
It's my understanding that the prostate feeds spermatozoa Gatorade.
Gotcha.
So it's like lubricates your spermatozoa and it makes juices for your cum.
Huh.
So when did you start? How old were you?
I started in 2017 or 18. I was 22 years old.
So you're like 25 now?
I'm like 20, yeah, 25-ish. And it was, it's a journey, you know?
So you go back home, and then you're like, oh, I didn't, you know, get my degree I said I was going to do. What am I going to do with my life?
So now I'm at a place in life that's just tolerable enough for me to wake up in the morning and keep going. You know, selling cars as a job is decent. It pays the bills. It puts people in cars, so to speak. But, you know,
I think I'll offer a little of both.
A little of everything.
At a dealership.
At a fucking dealership. I think that if I don't get it anywhere in comedy in the next probably 5 years, you know, I'll off myself. Because, like, at that point, what am I going to do?
Just sell cars
for the rest of my life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it amazes me you're still here with us. No, I'm kidding.
I know. It's a long road of misery and drudgery. After my special came out, bro, I could, like, go on about this, but I want to talk about you.
Talk about you.
I did, you know, compile this thing of, like, 500 newspapers.
Stacked up 500 newspapers.
And then I belly flopped. No, I got emails of, like, 500 newspapers.
Yeah.
Like, from New Zealand. Literally, Wales,
okay.
Like England, like big newspapers, small newspapers, ones that are just advertising, local pet shops in Perth, Australia, every newspaper possible. And I send this massive press release of when my special came out to every newspaper in the world, and not one wrote about it. And I was like, oh, maybe I should lay on the train tracks today. You know, I was like, this was the whole thing. When a comic puts out a special, that's when he can go professional. And not really when
that's
it's
not
on...
quite how it works.
I thought that was how it worked.
Oh, no.
And now...
you went into making your first special thinking that?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
What did you do when it didn't?
This is still... I only put it out like under a month ago.
Oh, so you sent it... you're still going through this.
The grieving process.
How many watches do you have?
Like 100 each. Let me talk about you.
Okay.
Last time I saw you at this particular venue that we're at, we're going to do stand-up at this place. A lot of people hit you up and they're like, oh, hey, Luke, hey, can I borrow $5? And I was like, that's crazy.
Isn't that weird?
And then another person came up and said, oh, hey, Luke, how much money do you have right now? And then you gave them, like, $20. And then 4 seconds later, another person was like, oh, Luke, I'm just a little short.
So then you invited me on your podcast.
Can I have some money? Why does that happen?
I'm not sure why that happens. I think it's something about... Because is it the last name or is it my job? Because I know, you know, we work with a bunch of... I mean, we tell jokes with a bunch of lowlifes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like fucking librarians and cooks for old homes and shit.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, they don't have a dollar to their name.
Uh-huh.
Right? So who am I to say no to give this person a dollar, which is fine, but why is that? That is a good question. Why is that? Is it the hair?
I think it's because you're obliged. You obliged.
You think it's
because
you think it's because I'm soft?
I think you handed out money at every three... Like, if three people in 1 minute asked me for money, I would probably leave.
Yeah?
I would probably leave that place and go, oh, I thought I was going to do comedy tonight, but a bunch of homeless pieces of shit won't stop asking for fucking money.
I'm glad you bring that up. I never even noticed this happen.
What?
I never even knew this happened.
Remember, I was talking with your girlfriend, who's a nice lady.
Yes, she's
and
a nice lady.
We were just chatting, and like... three people in a row hit you up for cash and you gave them all like $20.
Wow.
You're a nice guy.
What was I doing?
What?
What was I doing that
night?
They
were like, oh, you know, I don't have beer money. Just give me money.
Wow, like, just give me money.
And then you did. And I was like, what the fuck is going on right now?
Those motherfuckers. I'm going to go hit a bunch of people up. You have to give me names.
He's the bank. Steve Pozon.
Got a name. Names? Oh, yeah. Well, he's you know, he's homeless as it is.
Is he?
He looks it. That's enough for me.
I mean, he gets himself to venues. Doesn't he have a car?
Do you have any more A-plus questions on this
Yes,
sheet?
I do. So, you kind of have, like, a Hitler youth look.
Yeah.
You're, like, blonde and blue-eyed. You're from OSS Oseling.
I get the Hitler youth look. You think... Okay,
did
I
you
see
come
what
from
you did
a,
there.
Did you come from a privileged bloodline at all?
No. No, it would be nice.
Luke Rothschild did not.
The Rothschild part of my family is actually the poor part of my family, which is interesting. They had no money to their name, so I don't know if they were, you know, at one point just like the bastards of the family, right? Like they just banged the maid. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know if I'm part of the family or if I'm just an unfortunate receiver of that last name.
I'm a 50% reptilian myself, actual hybrid. So
I want to change my stage name to something else so people aren't so suspicious, but I feel like there's nothing more suspicious than changing your last name. You know, like,
yeah.
So like I don't want to be suspicious because of the Rothschild name, but if I change it to Roth, then people are going to be like, what the fuck's going on with this guy?
Right.
He was placed here.
Interesting. So your dad, you know, married your mom. Your dad is the Rothschild, obviously, right?
That's correct.
And then,
that's how
so
marriage works.
He's from, like, this very infamous banking family dynasty. Did he just choose to do interpretive dance and community theater in Ossling and move his family there and get away from the banking part of his family, or...
He's a stagehand, so he actually kind of did what you said. He was involved. He likes plays and shit. Made a modest living. There was never a sign of anything sinister going on in the family, and there was never a sign of money in the family. Which is why I'm so astounded by all these questions regarding money these days. Because I don't have... That's not something I really have.
Right. Yeah. Well, as far as I see, you're just a struggling open mic comic just like me.
That's right.
So that's what I see. But then, you know...
What you see is what you get.
Did you ever have pressure on you in your family to join the Freemasons or any other fraternal or esoteric order?
No. I wish. I wish there was opportunity for that. There's never any opportunity.
Do you believe that if you join them, someone would go, and then you would, like, blast through the ranks?
I would hope they would realize a fucking Rothschild when they see one, but I don't think so. I think people are too stuck in their ways. Everyone's fighting their own battle to get to the top in those groups. So why would they put me up, you know?
I think it's more of, like, a meritocracy, but of whoever has, like, the most pure blood.
But if I ever was, like, a news anchor, people would think something's up, you know?
That's the weird thing. I think something's up. You're a shitty open mic comic, and you know, your car was broke down last fucking week when I was trying to schedule you.
You think that's peculiar?
And so I was like, wait a minute, what's going on?
That's my life. Yeah, no, it's upsetting.
So you've never been around Thanksgiving dinner, and like Lord Graham de Rothschild comes in, and you know you're eating turkey and mashed babies, and you know you hear something.
It's funny. It's a no. My grandfather Rothschild was he tried to be a comic. He was like wrote some plays for Broadway. He was like he was never anything. You know. That's it.
So you never had like a...
There's nothing.
The
there's,
banking part of the family
no,
comes over.
There's fucking nothing.
Interesting. Are you into conspiracies at
I
all?
Love
are
them.
You into
yeah,
the history
I mean,
of it?
I think, you know, pedophiles are running the world and they did 9/11 and, you know, all that. And I think I don't know about the Rothschilds. I've read conflicting things. I've read that maybe they're... Their power, they're kind of like the scapegoats. They're who everyone turns to and says, oh, those are the bad people. When in reality, there's a lot more people throughout the years, you know, that have really thrived off a system they put in place.
Just a quick softball question. There was a judge in North Brunswick, New Jersey, called Judge Esther Salas.
Okay.
And she was in charge of the Deutsche Bank and the Jeffrey Epstein's relationship to Deutsche Bank case. She released a bunch of files to do with this case. Judge Esther Salas. The next day, a MKUltra gunman in a FedEx truck come by. Ding dong, bang, bang.
Desperate search for a killer after a federal judge's son is shot and killed. Her husband left in critical condition inside their house in New Jersey. The suspect came to the door dressed as a FedEx driver.
What a story. Todd Pyro joins us live from the newsroom as we're learning more details about the judge and her family, Todd. This is such a frightening story, guys. Good to see all three of you. The son of U.S. District Court Judge Esther Salas shot to death last night at their home in North Brunswick, New Jersey.
Killed their son, critically wounded the dad.
Really?
In retaliation for the judge releasing documents in this.
Oh, yeah, this happened recently.
10 minutes from my house.
Wow. He must live in a good neighborhood.
Who ordered the murder?
Who orders the murder? That's the Clintons, of course. That's a fucking... That's like every answer that there could be.
Is that the Rockefellers doing that?
The Rockefellers doing what?
Are they behind the scenes of the Clinton murders? Or is that just the Clintons on their own accord?
I think the Clintons... It runs deeper. You know, there's definitely a network. Like... Clinton, Podesta, fucking Anthony Weiner, a couple other people in power, you know, his wife, but
Huma Abedin.
Yeah, exactly. Who has a video circulating around the dark web with Hillary Clinton and they're like torturing a child. Have you seen that?
Frazzle Drip?
Yeah, you know your shit. There you go.
What's your favorite conspiracy, or what's the one that kind of broke your brain open?
9/11 broke the brain open because, like, you know, I was a little kid when I thought that there was something wrong, you know? And I was, like, 14 years old, and I'm like, I can see this, but nobody else around me can see this. Like, what, are people just retarded, or, like, you know?
Is it controlled demolition, and nobody's...
Oh, yeah, it's a controlled demolition. There were planes, though. I don't subscribe to the crazy idea that they're not planes. But, you know, there's just too much evidence. The Building 7, the Pentagon, all the missing money from the vaults underneath the Trade Center the days before. You know, there's so many things that just don't add up. And I wish I was, like, the real Rothschild. I wish I had the answers, you know? But I don't... I'm just... It sucks, because there's no name to... There's no one to blame, you know? So... That's why it's 2020 and we're still talking about 9/11. You know, it's going to be like the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's going to be in 40 years. Remember that? You know, there's still going to be fucking documentaries coming out about it. And it's like, who cares at that point?
Like
at this point, who cares? It's like 5 years ago, who cared? Like the problem is the government, anytime they do something like this that's sketchy... all they have to do is wait it out, and people stop caring after a year, you know? And the commission report comes out years later. You know, a bunch of shit's omitted. And no one cares. No one, like, it's... People move on, and that's the craziest thing to me. I hold grudges, I guess. You know?
Yeah, it's like, the year 2101, like, you know, 100 years after, they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, it was Larry Silverstein. Oh, yeah, it was, you
know. Exactly, it was the...
Doing the little Jew lightning because he bought the buildings right before 9/11 and he put all this terrorist insurance on it. And then they exploded with planes ran by Raytheon and then...
And then he hires gray lawyers who make it pay out twice as two, you know, as two different terrorist attacks. One for each plane and he fucking makes out like a bandit.
Yeah. So for his $5 million down payment, he got $4 billion of insurance money.
Pretty good.
I mean, I understand that, like, you know, people want money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to be that shameless and to be like, I profited off of 9/11. It's like, you know, I'm trying very hard not to say anything anti-Semitic, but it's just like... Can you have some fucking class and, like, give dime one to the fucking families? You know, if you make $4 billion and you give $1 million to the families...
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, then that's chump change, and who gives a shit? You know? And they couldn't even do that.
So I was perusing YouTube the other day, and I saw a video where Lord Jacob Rothschild was bragging that he created Israel... with the Balfour Declaration. I want to play that clip right now.
And it begins with three words. Dear Lord Rothschild, why was it that this letter was sent by the Foreign Secretary to your great uncle Walter?
It's an interesting question because he was really interested in ornithology, although he became interested in Zionism. I think the reason was this, that It was primarily a movement from Eastern Europe, but they didn't clarify who was in charge of that movement. And in addition, it was, after all, in Great Britain. So they felt that the Rothschild family should be the one to whom it was addressed. And Walter was Lord Rothschild, and he was a Zionist. And those really are the background reasons.
So Lord Jacob Rothschild, are you related to this person?
I wish. That would be nice. I might be more important. I might know more things. But I know, I've heard this theory, and I believe it.
Well, I just played a clip where he was bragging that he started Israel by the Balfour Declaration. He just wrote something. Oh, this
what year was
start
that in?
Israel.
Was it before or after World War II?
Just after.
Just after World War II.
We needed a place for those Jews.
Gotcha.
I honestly don't know why they didn't just have... They love Miami. It's like, why couldn't we have just given them, like, a big chunk of Florida? Like, an Israel-sized chunk of Florida.
And then there's no Muslims around there.
Yeah. There's no conflict.
Yeah.
Why displace people that were there? Shoehorn...
You just got to worry about South American cartels down there. That's it.
You know?
I mean, those, they're far and few, and they got good cocaine.
Yeah. And then, you know, they'd be out there tanning, you know... Making bagels. I mean, I just think that would have been an easier solution after World War II. I don't know. Call me crazy. all of my questions, you have, like, not really... You're not in a position, really, to answer them.
I'm not. I wish I was. You got the wrong Rothschild.
I know. Well, Patrice O'Neill had the famous bit about the Rothschild family.
When you look at that money, you look at the pyramid. The pyramid is key. The bottom of the pyramid is all the people. The top is these couple of people. What happened, the difference between now and 500 years ago, is that it was the guy, then the people. The people were right outside this fucker's door. At some point, they had to create stuff for the masses. Like, hey, come here, man. Look at this fucking piece of shit. You don't want to have your feet as dirty as him, right? Come on, I got this new shit. You clean your feet, give you some feet cleaner, give you some back warmer, get you in a house, get you in a bed, get you feeling good, and you go, hey, man, you want to be down with me? Oh, you know what? Run this fucker. So you never forget that we are willing, as people, to fuck other people.
Huh.
So how much... adrenochrome do you think Hillary and Bill Clinton drink every day?
Do you see their faces? You see how they look these days? A lot. It gotta be a lot. Chugging babies down by the fucking barrel.
They look spry. So what is adrenochrome?
A big gulp of foreskin. Isn't that what it is? Foreskin?
No.
No?
It's pituitary gland hormone.
That's correct.
So they scare somebody and then they put a razor straw through their pituitary gland.
Which is like, isn't that like Monsters, Inc.? With a little more gore?
I haven't seen that movie.
No?
They do that. They drink.
The whole point is that, like, children are energy to this monster town, you know? So they sneak in the rooms and scare them.
Yeah.
You know?
So then they harvest this
fear
energy.
Right. You know, that's kind of related. That's kind of...
And then dark energies to feed off this fear and then they contact them?
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. But it's got to be a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I know some people that kind of need it.
And I think it all comes from, like, Aleister Crowley.
But you can buy it. Like, it's available on the internet.
Yeah,
you can buy it. You just need money. $10,000. Yeah, no, maybe not the Prime, but it's readily available.
It's on Fresh Direct. That's crazy because it does. You need to kill a person to get adrenochrome.
That's the only way?
You have to drain the pituitary gland hormone. I mean, maybe you can make it synthetically. Maybe you can, in a lab, create the precursor.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the real shit, I mean, who wants that?
Wouldn't you gotta have the real shit.
The organic.
And the real shit is from dead... How many babies do you think it takes to get high? Like, one baby can get you high a couple times?
That is interesting. You know, I'm not sure if it's always a baby. I think it can be a full-grown human, too.
And make an adult?
I believe so. Wouldn't you want a bigger... Like, if you're just eating a walnut, yeah. Like, wouldn't a bigger walnut give you more? So if you
I
have
guess.
A,
I don't
a
know
full-grown
how they...
brain, that's a full-grown walnut, and then you can crack that open and get the adrenochrome?
Yeah, I just thought that the younger, the better. That's how I read about it.
What do you... So... What do you think is going to happen, like, you know, in this Epstein case? I really think that the Epstein case...
Nothing.
Now you think everyone's going to be let off. They got Ghislaine Maxwell now.
Do they? Have you seen one picture of her in the 3 months they've had her?
Well, allegedly she's in the same jail that Epstein was in.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
In New York City, because nothing went wrong with that.
Exactly. Like, that didn't... Yeah.
I love how people... You know, Prince Andrew was one person who went right on TV and was like, oh, I'm so saddened by Epstein. He killed himself. Like, this is a guy who was there. He clearly made love to underage girls on the island. And what Prince Andrew said, like, the first thing he's like, oh, well, he killed himself. And we're very sorry about that. Mm. No, he didn't.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. So everyone knows that that's a lie. And then Prince Andrew's the first one at the front of the line to go... My family murder. He killed himself.
Again, new information is coming out since his suicide.
That would not help his case.
But did you see his BBC, Prince Andrew's BBC interview about...
Yeah.
That it was, I had to show leadership and I had to go and see him and I had to tell him, that's it.
That was December of 2010.
Yep.
He threw a party to celebrate his release and you were invited as
no,
the guest of honour.
Oh, in 2010, there certainly wasn't a party to celebrate his release in December, because it was a small dinner party. There were only 8 or 10 of us, I think, at the dinner. If there was a party, then I'd know nothing about that.
You were invited to that dinner as a guest of honour.
Well, I was there, so there was a dinner. I don't think it was quite as you might put it, but yeah, okay. I was there at a dinner. Yeah.
So it was so funny to me. It's like, you know, he said at one point, which is a bit of a gaffe, like, you know, when a man has sex, he feels great. And, you know, so it's like, that was awesome. It's like, what does this have to do with your innocence? Like, I want to play that clip. I'll find that clip and play it now.
And without putting too fine a point on it, if you're a man, it is a positive act to have sex with somebody. You have to take some sort of positive action. And so therefore, if you try to forget, it's very difficult to try and forget positive action. And I do not remember.
You have to turn yourself in.
People think I'm bullshitting, that he actually gaffed like that.
Yeah?
He was like, I love sex! Like, so you didn't have... With the underage? No. I mean, coming. Like, it was like, what?
Jesus.
Buckets.
Wreck of a creature.
Provided a photo of the two of you together.
Yes.
Your arm was around her waist.
Yes.
You've seen the photo.
I've seen the photograph.
How do you explain that?
I can't. Because I have absolutely no memory of that photograph ever being taken.
Do you recognise yourself in the photo?
Oh, yeah, it's pretty difficult not to recognise yourself.
Your friend suggested that the photo is fake.
I think it's, from the investigations that we've done, you can't prove whether or not that photograph is faked or not, because it is a photograph of a photograph of a photograph. So it's very difficult to be able to prove it, but... I don't remember that photograph ever being taken.
But it's possible that it was you with your arm around her waist.
That's me, but whether that's my hand or whether that's the position, I have simply no recollection of a photograph ever being taken.
The world has now seen the photo that Virginia Roberts provided, taken by Epstein, we understand, in Ghislaine Maxwell's house.
Well, here's the problem. I've never seen Epstein with a camera in my life.
I think it was Virginia Roberts' camera. She said a little Kodak one that she lent to Epstein. He took a photo And your arm is around her waist.
I don't remember that photograph ever being taken. I don't remember going upstairs in the house, because that photograph is taken upstairs.
So let me just ask you a philosophical question. So if you are, you know, let's say you're in a secret society and you do gay shit to pass to the next level, is that gay?
Yes, it is.
Let's say you're in
horribly gay.
You're in the OTO, the Ordo Templo Orialis, which is Aleister Crowley's.
And that's when you
got to
get out of it.
And you're in Costa Mesa, California, with Lon Duquette, who runs that organization today. And he takes off his pants and he says, and then Peter puts the wiener in his mouth, and the ritual begins now.
You can't. You can't do it. What the fuck?
What if you get a record contract?
That's the line, you know. That's when they have shit on you. That's how you know they're videotaping you secretly somewhere, and they have this, and now you're theirs, you know. And that's what happens to people in media.
In media,
yeah.
Which ones? You think Anderson Cooper? There's a film somewhere that CNN holds over him, and they say keep.
No, I don't think CNN holds it over him. I don't. I think the people that. I think not only Anderson Cooper, but his bosses have things held over them, whether it's things with children or all sorts of weird things.
Who has all the tapes?
Shit.
Who's got the
I think Epstein did.
Case? Oh, no, but where are they now? Does Ghislaine Maxwell have access to this?
No. They have to be... They were taken by one of Epstein's counterparts. Epstein was... not operating alone. He was operating for someone. The question is who? Was he operating for Israel? Was he operating for the U.S.? Was he operating for Russia? No one knows, and no one seems to care. But the question is who has the tapes, and whoever has the tapes is the people that he was working for. The people that made everything possible for Epstein. The people that got him an island. Let him live so lavishly. He was on a payroll, you know? He wasn't on his own payroll.
Right. I subscribe to this theory that Ghislaine Maxwell was like above him in like his handler. I think people made it like Epstein's Island. I think Ghislaine Maxwell was the liaison between Les Wexner and Jeffrey Epstein.
I think that's right, because that's how he met her.
I think, and I read a lot of Whitney Webb articles. Whitney Webb thinks that Les Wexner is actually the handler of the entire situation. Because he gave Jeffrey Epstein a Manhattan house.
Yeah, he's the one that made it happen.
$70 million. And I saw this document. He gave it to him for a dollar. Because legally in a transaction of real estate, it has to be for compensation.
Yeah.
So he gave him a dollar and then got the mansion.
Wow.
And then used that. And then there's footage of Prince Andrew waving to a very young girl, leaving, and he's like, I had no idea, but when I busted nuts, it felt great. And it's like, I think you just admitted something there, you know?
Yeah, I think there's something to that.
When my royal cum came out of my mouth. It's crazy. Do you think that that will factor into the election? Do you think that the elections will be suspended due to coronavirus? Where is this country headed?
Right now? That's a good question. Do you think so? I think so. I think they're gonna try. Cause what do you subscribe to? Do you think Trump is some sort of good force or a bad force or just somebody that's there?
Well, my friend Benjamin Fulford, who used to be the Asia Pacific bureau chief of Forbes magazine, always loves to point out that the Rothschild family bailed out Trump. So he went bankrupt 5 times, and then he went to Rothschild's every time.
Yes.
So he thinks that he's there under their control, the Rothschild family's control.
Gotcha.
Trump. So does that make him a good actor or a bad one? I don't know. A controlled one. It's like, who's above him? It's like, the president really doesn't matter. And I think we found that out with Obama, because Obama was like, hope and change. I'm a poor black man.
Yeah, nothing ever. Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, you know what? I want to drone murder whistleblowers. And it's like, wait, I thought you were offering protections for whistleblowers, but you literally signed documents that said robots can murder people who go against this cabal from a death from the sky. They can shoot with robots through your window.
Yeah, it's not really the hope and change everyone was looking
for. Yeah, so it's like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe he's not the president. So, like, what's the level? Like,
yeah, there's plenty of levels, and that's why it's such a sham to vote in the first place, because it's just a way to make you feel like you did your part, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're giving, it's giving consent, too, when you vote, because it's like, well, I'm subscribing to, you know, I believe that my vote matters. And you're showing that you believe that you think it'll change your voice changes the status quo whatsoever, you know, which is, I would beg to differ.
So you're like, oh, I subscribe to the fact that these three presidents have not said shit about 9/11 when I know the truth about it.
Exactly.
None of these people are saying anything about it. Doesn't matter who gets in office.
Well, I mean, that would cause a fucking uproar. That's the problem. You have to look at it like. That's why people like Trump, because people think, with the whole Q thing, people think Trump, like, has hinted at things, because they know that a sitting president can't just go out and spew all those national secrets. That would fucking cause chaos among the peasantry. So,
That's Carl, the host.
That is the host, Carl.
Maybe we should go get on this list, huh?
Let's do it.
You have to turn yourself in.
What was your upbringing life like? Your dad was into community theater and stuff. He was making the sets, right?
Yeah, and also raping babies.
What?
No, you just wanted me to say that.
So he would make sets for little community places. Is that where you kind of got the theater bug and stand-up?
No, I just kind of, I've always wanted to do it. You know, I always wanted it. But, never had the balls, you know? And then just said, fuck it. Life is at rock bottom right now. It can only get better from here.
Yeah.
What are people going to do? Boo me off stage, you know? And that hasn't happened yet, so it's okay.
And then John McGinley's like, hey, I got this YouTube video called The Neighbor. And there's a script
No,
for
he
it
didn't have a script.
In
and,
my
he,
head.
And he didn't and have just... a name for the episode either. He was just, he had nothing. He had nothing. Except a dream, you know.
How long is he like the first? Your first like good friend in stand up, McGinley?
No, I mean I have a couple good friends, you know.
You can have another beer if you want.
Oh,
beer.
Thanks, buddy. I'll take another beer. No, I you know he's up there. He's one of my good pals from stand up, but you know I have a couple others that I met along the way and early on, and you know they've kind of helped me through it, and you know you kind of see the same circle of people week after week as you're.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're coming to these mics to practice.
Do you go to Jersey City and Hoboken and do stand-up there?
Sometimes. It's a bit of a drive for me. But when it's necessary, you know, I always try to get out at least 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's kind of tough.
What was your first mic?
First mic, Lucy's Laugh Lounge in Pleasantville, New York. Nice place. Nice little... little place, probably like a 50-seater venue. They had a good open mic going every week, and they had some talent, you know, some talent from like the city and the area that actually did some things. But then they started charging money, and then COVID, and now it's gone. You know, just like everything else good in this life is gone.
there's a bar that I tried to get. What was the name of that bar? I tried to get a show going. And I don't want to name names. The guy's been nice to me. But a guy called Anthony C. started a show there and charged money for the audience to watch in an open mic.
Really?
And B. McNally's. So when I went to B. McNally's, I go, hey, let me have a show here. And they go, we will never do that again. Because this piece of shit asshole charged a cover to the comics and to... Not only he charged the comics and the audience to watch an open mic.
That's fucking crazy.
And they're like, we think comics are pieces of shit people. We think they're scam artists. And I was like, I won't do any of those things you're saying, though.
Wow.
You know? And they're like, get out of here.
That's
you know?
Nuts.
So, yeah. So they started charging money for, was it a book show or an open mic show at...
It was just an open mic. You know, it was a $5 to do your 5 minutes. So it was kind of shitty, but, you know, definitely nothing like charging the audience. Even they would never charge audience members there, even.
Yeah, yeah.
As cheap as they fucking are.
So what was the best show you did? What was the worst show you did?
The best show I did?
Yeah, what was the show that you did where you went off stage and you're like, all right, this is what I want to do?
Yet to come. There's been a couple nights like that, you know, just big crowds that night, maybe 40, 50 people, and you just kill, you know, and it's just nothing better. Nothing better. You feel intellectual and like you're on top of things, and when you can make people laugh, there's nothing better, right? Because it means you surprise them.
Right? Yeah, no,
nothing
I hear you.
Better than surprising people.
Do you have a pathway? So I had this false pathway, right? You put out the special, you become famous, and then you're on Conan, and then you get knighted by Queen Elizabeth.
I kind of knew the whole time. I kind of known the whole time that it's going to be bullshit. I never had a false pretense of like, oh yeah, so I'm going to go to open mics for a couple of years, and then I'll be booked, and then I'll have a special, and then I'll be on Netflix. You know, I never... Because that's not how it works. Maybe, one in a million, that's how it works, and you just get fucking lucky. But there's a lot of cocksucking to go on, and there's a lot of just sheer luck being in the right place at the right time. So all you can do is get it to as many places as you can go and hope that one of those times is right, you know?
So I always thought it was a big mistake, you know, people that would go to shows and shows and shows and never sort of like take time off to work on the business aspect. Like, you know, it's one thing to go out 7 nights a week, you know, and it's another thing to like send an email to an agent, right? And
that's
I think
true.
A lot of people like spend so much time on shows that they drive themselves into such poverty that then they don't have the stability to like send resumes. And
you're,
I'm like,
you're
there's
right.
got to be both.
There's got to be middle ground. You shouldn't do that right away. You shouldn't do that for the first couple years, you know. But after a while, if you're not doing that, all you're doing is hoping for results and just going to like essentially what is like a practice or a gym session, you know, like it doesn't mean anything, open mics, right? So like going to 7 of them in a week, yeah, you're gonna get better, but you're really not gonna get exposure, and it's not gonna be the place where they take you and they're like, oh, you should have a spot on Conan, you know.
Yeah,
saw this guy at the Chuckle Bucket last week, and he's, you know, it doesn't work like that. I wish life did, but it's a lot more realistic. It's a lot more brutal of a life.
So what is your plan of an ideal pathway? Or, like, why do you keep doing it if it's all hopeless?
It's all... You gotta keep doing it because you love it, and you hope that you're that outlier, right? That's it. You hope... Everyone seems to hope they're an outlier.
Right.
You know, like an exception to the rule. They think that that's the timeline I said before is exactly what happens.
You know what's weird about the COVID is I also have like a sneaky suspicion that in some way, like the establishment, the cabal that runs the world is like afraid of freedom of speech in most forms, and stand-up comedy being something that they're like deathly afraid of. You know what I mean?
I guess. I don't think...
And so like they shut it down with this...
I don't think they even know anyone even thinks about that. You know, like no one cares about stand-up comedy when you're fucking thinking about running the world. I just
think that's
a product. No, I think that's just a product of like things closing. Stand-up comedy went down the shitters. Like, you know, it's
just
like
the Sizzler went bankrupt today.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and it sucks when shit like that, stuff like that happens, but like, you know, like, pro sports just came back. I knew pro sports was going to come back before comedy comes back because people just care about that more. You know, it hits a wider fan base. So
well, you can have the sport without an audience. You can't have stand-up without an audience. Just, like, the nature of it.
True. But I don't think anyone's out to kill stand-up, but I think that it's dying as a result.
Do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic is a way to take freedoms or like depopulate? Do you think that the globalists want there to be only 500 million people on the planet, and like putting out a virus is accidentally, on purpose, putting out a virus as a way to depopulate the...
I think so. I think if not, if they're not depopulating now, at least they're getting they're prepping everything. You know how many people are now just on government assistance, and you'll do whatever the government says. If the government says you'll only get your unemployment check if you fucking get this vaccination, what are most people gonna do? Are they gonna give away $600 a week just so they don't consent to one vaccination? Yeah, like, that's the problem. It's where it ends, and I'm scared about where it ends.
Yeah, I was. Do you know that pandemic movie? Mm-hmm. I was watching the first. The second one came out in the last couple weeks, and yeah. I was just watching the second one, and oh my god. All they do in the... And, like, I don't know why this movie is so controversial. Like, the second one, all they do is follow the patents. Like, the big corporations made patents. Not only did they patent coronavirus last year, but they said, we're going to release it accidentally on purpose in the patent for it. Yeah. So they patented the virus because they want... They're so stupid that they release their evil plan. We will make this virus, we will release it, and we will own the patent. It's like... Let's, what are they gonna get? For every death, they get money.
I think they have to. I think it's like it has to be. No, like they put it in broad daylight for people to see. That's the thing with every conspiracy. The answers are out there. The answers always they're always a stretch, but they're out there. And I think like they disclose everything to the public. You can see what's in vaccinations and injections already. And you would know that they haven't been safe for years. If you were to do, 20 minutes of research, it's out there. But, and I think that's kind of, how they play the game. They put the information out there for people to see it and people to feel like they're crazy because, but it's never, it doesn't matter,
But then the mainstream news never gets picked ignores up. What ignores the real it. Facts are and then keeps spinning. And then the brainwashed people that don't do any research are like, no, well... That's all been discredited. It's in the patent. But that's all been discredited. That movie's banned from YouTube because it's false information.
It's not, though.
Did you watch the patent? The best patent lawyer in the world go over every patent to do with it? No, I did. Why? Because I saw the stupid movie, and that's what the movie is.
Yeah.
And he's like, his firm is like the best patent firm ever. And this lawyer's like, this is what they did. Then they have Dr. Judy Mikovits, who was the peer review, the lead on the peer review of what AIDS was. Like, when they were like, this is what AIDS is, Dr. Judy Mikovits was, the lead doctor on it. And then they're like, this is fake news.
Yep.
She's been discredited.
Oh, yeah, that's
No,
what,
she
yeah.
hasn't, though.
Yeah, I know that lady. She's cool.
So, it's like, I don't know. It's hard to argue with, any of my family members or, it's like I live in a different world than a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, because people are just like, oh, it's a hunky-dory day. The president's retarded again. We hate him. But besides that, everything's okay.
Right. They can't, they're like, oh, he's spray-painted. Yes, he is. Yeah. Like, that's, superficial cosmetics. And yes, he's arrogant and a narcissist. He's obviously bald and he keeps combing it over. Okay, this is a non-story to me. It's completely irrelevant.
Yeah, and that's what they do. They make a lot of things from non-stories, and they turn them into stories somehow. And when you read deep into the story, you're like, there's actually no content here. This is just a bunch of words that mean really nothing.
And what this movie proves and what I know about is Dr. Charles Lieber of Harvard, his sister school was that lab in Wuhan, and... his grad students were found with vials of coronavirus, and the FBI arrested Dr. Charles Lieber. But Trump is just like, oh, that's the Kung flu. That's the Chinese virus. Yeah, in connection with Harvard, in connection with CIA Dr. Charles Lieber, in connection with that, you have international sort of, the only so many people in the world are virologists who can do this kind of science, and they know each other even though they're in China. And so they sent the virus over there, and then it was released accidentally on purpose. That's what happened. So, in Trump going, and also we owe China 70 times our gross domestic product, And now we're trying to pin coronavirus on them to, like, almost sue them back for what we owe them in money.
Yeah.
That's what's going on.
That's crazy.
So we, like, we gave them a virus that they released, and then we're going, we're going to sue you in a new Bretton Woods agreement or a new, like, we have to
So you think coronavirus is not only a ploy to get people to stay inside, but you think it's also a ploy to make China, like, clear some of our debt?
Yes.
Wow.
So isn't it common knowledge? Everyone knows that China owns trillions of Americans' debts?
Yeah.
So then if Trump goes, that's the Kung Flu, the Chinese virus, they could be like, well, you destroyed our economy. We were good at, we wanted to pay you back.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we have to just renegotiate. That's the thing about Trump is one thing... is, like, he's very good at being bankrupt in bankrupt proceedings because he's been bankrupt 5 times.
Yeah.
And the U.S. is, like, bankrupt, right? So this is... he's actually not bad at that.
True. True.
And he's like, well, what pair of tits gets half my money now? You know? So he's a little confused about that because it's always to do with a divorce as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but it's just, I don't know. It's so fucked up. It's like, is this sustainable where the rich always get the money at the end?
It can't be. It can't.
Is this sustainable? Someone's coming to our window.
It's got to collapse at some point, yeah?
He's just curious. Hey, we're doing a podcast. What are you doing? Get out of here.
What?
We're doing a podcast.
Oh, you're doing a podcast? Yeah, Why'd you open the door?
I don't know. You look like you were going to knock on the window or something.
Well, I mean, just introduce me now at this point.
I don't know your name.
I'm Brandon.
Oh, Brandon joined the podcast.
All right.
Nice to see you, buddy. No, no, no. Can you please leave?
Oh.
Bye, Brandon. God. That's weird. I hate when that happens.
That's another one that was going to ask me for money.
Is that why that happened?
Probably.
Is that why that happened? I don't know. Does he have a history of doing
that? It's possible.
That's your friend, Brandon?
I know.
How many times have you given Brandon money?
Countless.
And just like a fucking alley cat. That is why I always prefer to, like, you know what? Let's go back in the car and record this second part. We were thinking about recording it out by the park benches.
But it would have been a mess.
It would have been a mess. People would ask you for money.
Fucking
they're too
stray
loud
dogs
of,
everywhere.
You know, fucking Carl's going to put some business plans by you that he wants money from.
Yep.
Carl, the host of the
he
show.
He wants
the
some
reserve.
Royalties.
All right. Well... what else are we we were talking about geopolitics and Trump and yeah, it's also in 9/11, you know, when I researched, did some deep research on 9/11, that we owed China crazy amounts of money, and
oh, yeah.
It was gold. That so we did this trade deal with China where they were like, don't worry about it, we have all this gold in the World Trade Center that we're going to give you back, literally September 12th. We're going to give you all this money that's in the World Trade Center. This sounds like bullshit. This is not bullshit. They go, look, we're going to give you back these tens of trillions of tons of gold that we have conveniently in the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
We're going to give it back to you, China, because we owe you this money for our fucking debt.
Really?
And then 9/11 happened, and China's like... oh, fuck me, you know?
Yeah.
They were like, oh, you kaka saka,
yeah.
You know? They knew.
Oh, shit.
And now it's like another, this whole big, you know, 19 years later, they're like, you owe us money. And we're like,
what else can we do? Virus.
Yeah. You gave us a virus. Now we gave them the virus, and then when they released it, we go, whoa, you ruined the world economy.
Exactly.
We don't owe you this money anymore. There has to be some kind of... what I see coming imminently out of all of this is a restructuring of the financial system. It has to happen.
And that's the
when,
goal?
Like, you know, California goes bankrupt. Like, you know what I mean? When all these states go bankrupt, it's like, okay, well...
what do we do now? Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then the federal government... yeah, at some point, there's a structure system where the federal government gets more power. Is that the end game?
I think it's like, it seems like there's like bad actors on one side and then good versus evil in every situation.
Yeah.
So the people that plan to crash the economy with this pandemic, some of the people I've mentioned, you know, Fauci, you know, was you know, a suspect. Bill Gates is definitely a suspect of creating this. The CDC was there. I don't know. Watch Plandemic 2.
Yeah.
That shit scared the shit out of me. I was watching that. And if you think that that's not credible, you haven't watched it. So go fuck yourself. You don't know anything. Watch this patent lawyer in the Plandemic 2 talk about the patent, the chain of custody of the patents to do with coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And then they say in the document of the patent that they're going to release it accidentally on purpose is the actual word used in the patent.
Yeah.
And then it happened. And this was March 2019. This patent for coronavirus was created. So it's like there's this cabal that's like in on the secret. And then they use their media that they own as well to do every... to just lie 24 hours a day.
Just 24 hours a day. Just
sensationalize.
Nothing. Yeah.
And like they know the plan because they did it. And then they're like, Trump farted today in Heathrow Airport, and it's just like, yeah. he disrespected everybody.
You see the Tom Hanks stuff?
Yeah, there was this lady called Sarah Ashcroft. Ashcroft is an interesting name that comes up in the military industrial complex a lot. Mm-hmm. And the Ashcroft satanic ritual abuse family gave Sarah Ashcroft to Tom Hanks to have sex with when she was 13. I believe that's true. I read her whole statement. I believe it.
Yeah?
What do you think about Tom Hanks? What have you learned?
Like, if I learned anything from the Me Too movement, it's that we can't discredit survivors, you know?
Right? Yeah, so why is everyone discrediting this survivor? But I like that movie.
Tom Hanks, though. Forrest Gump,
yeah? Yeah, yeah.
Gonna rape the lady? Or bottle lady? But yeah, it's makes you ask questions, that's for sure.
It is weird how people's preferences for, like, if they like somebody, then they go, oh, that, well, that didn't happen. But if, you know, all of, you know, Trump has some Me Too accusations, oh, they're all real. Yeah. But Tom Hanks, oh, that can't be. Because he's nice. He's handsome.
We like him.
Well, what about Sarah Ashcroft saying very specifically that when she was 13, she was sold to him for sex?
Yeah.
I believe that. And also, when I see the name Ashcroft, it's like, yeah, I know. There's this book called Kathy O'Brien called The Trans Something of America. It's all about satanic ritual abuse. And she was like, her daughter was buggered by Herbert Walker Bush all the time.
Huh.
And she like wrote this in her book that like her daughter was given to Herbert Walker for sex all the time. And then like she wasn't sued.
Really?
And like, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
So a president she accuses of rape of an underage girl, and then he doesn't sue her. Why? Because it's true, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, Kathy O'Brien wrote a good book that I read.
I'll give you that.
That's why I wanted to talk to you, because I have all this
knowledge. You got a lot of knowledge.
So there was also a guy called Isaac Cappy. Do you know who that is?
Oh, yeah, of course. He was killed by Tom Hanks.
Do you believe this?
I don't know if he was killed. He wasn't killed by Tom Hanks, but he was killed by somebody that Tom Hanks hired. That's for sure.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. If not Tom Hanks, then, you know, I mean, there was this cryptic tweet that Hanks sent out that makes people, ties him to Cappy. And then the fact that he was talking about Hanks makes people think that it was him. It was either, you know, it could have been the cabal or Hanks. Or someone tied to him. That's what I think.
Well, look at Tom Hanks in the Da Vinci Code. It's all about the Freemasons and how they have symbolism hidden. And then who plays the lead of the Dan Brown novel?
Yeah.
Tom Hanks. Dan Brown, I know for a fact, is a Freemason because he used to be a professor at USC and I knew one of his pupils. I won't name this person's name, but he said Dan Brown, after he was the teacher, he went to his office hours, he goes, join the Masons. And then he did, and he had a very successful career, and I met him on a reality show where he was way above me on the reality show. And he goes, yeah, Dan Brown told me to join the Freemasons, and then I did, and now my life is awesome.
Wow.
Okay, and then who gets the role of the Dan Brown novel? Not Mason.
Yeah, of course.
Tom Hanks.
Of course.
And the problem, and as we were saying before, is like that thing of like, well, then they... if you do some gay shit or whatever, some unforgivable shit by society in a ritual, they give you something, which is a career in Hollywood, but then they also take something from you, your credibility forever, and they own you.
Yeah.
Because they can at any point drop this knowledge. Now, with the Internet of Things, Tom Hanks was a protected man. He's protected by the cabal. But the Internet of Things, his victims are still out there, and they can go, hey, Tom Hanks raped me when I was 13. I'm Sarah Ashcroft, and this is my story.
Exactly.
And you can't...
You can censor it to a point, but, you know, it's going to be somewhere.
Sure, they gave him another movie, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but he got off Instagram and moved to Greece because everyone found out. And it's like these Silicon Valley people try to control the narrative and with their, you know, blocking of certain videos from YouTube and blocking of certain content from Facebook. But the thing is, when you make this public utility, the problem is they have bad karma and they use YouTube to censor people, but then eventually the truth gets out there on the platform that they created to just be bread and circus for the peasants, the useless eaters, but then they're using it again. Isn't that weird how karma works?
It's strange how it goes around.
Dude, this guy is fucking pissing me off. Is he asking you for money visually? Just go.
I'll see what I can do.
Well, we'll talk later.
Okay.
You censored. I've disabled your ability to
talk.
To put your window down in the future. So gotcha. I have a handy button here for children who are playing with the
there
windows.
You go.
And then because I'm in the driver's seat, and I click that button, and now if he comes again to mooch a ride from you or money
whatever
from you,
it is.
The window's going to remain closed.
Ooh. It's a nice feeling off my back.
All right. And he blamed Carl. And Carl's a nice... I mean, how do you blame Carl?
Yeah.
You know, he's a nice guy. He's like, oh, I got screwed on the list. You showed up late, cocksucker. That's why you're low on the list, you piece of shit. We were here when Carl got here, and we're at the front of the line. And then he sees that, and he's like, well, can I switch with you because I'm late and lazy? Can I have money? No, you can't be on the podcast. I'm just going to sit here. What is happening?
Yeah, that was weird.
God, I hate people.
That's okay.
I would never get in someone's car that specifically said not to get in your car.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
Okay, so... Adrenochrome. Yeah, it is weird. I always thought, like... You know, I did work for the Freemasons when I was in... I went to undergrad at Eugene Lang College. During one summer, I went to a temp agency. I said, I'll be a receptionist, I'll be assistant, whatever you need. They go, hey, do you want to work for the Freemasons? I go, what's that? And they go, well, you know, just wear something nice and go here and answer their phones. And, you know, they're a little weird. You might run into the Grand Wizard of this or the Supreme Emperor of this. And they like their special titles and just, you know, call them what they're supposed to be called. So I said, sure. And so I go in there. I had several weird things happen that day. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but there was, like, the master mason who, like, ran the thing, and he went in his office and closed the door.
Yeah.
So I knew that his, you know, office, to ring his office, I would forward the phone call to office, you know.
Yeah, whatever
47
it was.
Or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So his wife called, and I forwarded to him. And then he didn't take the call. It went to voicemail. So then she called back. Oh, no, I'm really his wife. And I go, I know, I'll forward you. But bop. And he just hit click reject. So she called like literally 20 times.
Jesus.
And I kept forwarding it to him. And then he rejected it. And then she would call me. Why did you reject my call? I go, I didn't. I forwarded it to your office. You know? And she's like, no, but seriously, I'm his wife. I go, I believe you. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
I keep sending you.
And you have the same last name. As him, you keep addressing yourself as this person. So that was weird. I eventually went into the guy's office, and I just knocked on the door, because, like, this was happening for, like, an hour, and I was like, okay, let me go talk to this person. I knocked on his door. I said, he's like, hello? And I go, hi, I'm the assistant. He's like, whatever, peasant. Like, he just saw past me as he was probably looking for my pineal gland. And I talked to him, and he didn't say a word back.
Huh.
Did not speak to me. And then... later on, someone called and was like, I was like, hello, you know, Freemasons of New York City. This is on 23rd Street.
Yeah.
And he was like, but I found the drugs in the phone book. I hung up. Again, he calls back. I'm like, hello, you know, Mason Hotline. And he's like, I'm dying. I was like, what the fuck? I hung up. Later, that guy came in. And I'm like, well, I took all your calls. Like, that guy.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm Robert, you know. And he's, I'm like, why did you say that you were dying? And why did you scream that you found drugs in a potted plant? And why did you keep being weird on the phone with me? And now I'm looking at you. And he's like, you didn't identify yourself. Where's the other assistant? I go, I'm just replacing them for the day. He's like, you didn't identify yourself, so I didn't feel comfortable, you know. It's like, why didn't you just hang up? Why did you? He pretended to be crazy.
That's bizarre. On the phone with me.
When he didn't recognize the assistant working that day.
That's a weird occurrence.
Later on, the guy who hired me took me in a room, a separate room, and asked me if I wanted to join. And I always think, if I had said yes, would I have had an HBO deal, a Comedy Central deal? Like, you know what I mean? Would my life have been completely fucking different?
Do you regret it?
You know, when I watch Stephen Colbert just, like, cucking to the libtards so fucking hard, and it seems like he is a hollow person.
Yeah.
I know he's a Mason. I know he's a 33rd degree Mason because he said this on his show.
Wait a second. I understand showing the gays the door. But now you're going to discriminate against me because I'm a Freemason? Which I am not. Because it's a secret society. And if I were in it, I'd have to lie and say that I am not. Which I am not. And just think of the poor Freemasons. Don't they already face enough judgment? I mean, living a double life, sneaking around, never being able to show their family who they really are. And all the lies. Saying, I'm just working late, honey, when really, I'm meeting a bunch of men to do God knows what in a windowless hall. I can't believe it's come to this. The Freemasons once controlled the levers of global power, and now we can't get an embroidered apron again, is what I would say. And no, we will not settle for silkscreen. What am I, a Shriner? Next up.
Wow, it's going to take me. You know, by the time you learn quantum mechanics, it's like being a 33rd degree Freemason. You have to work your way up.
I know what that's
through
like.
The years.
Yeah, but I can't actually tell you.
It's like being a 30.
He's completely not funny. And I really believe, like, when I'm watching him perform that he doesn't have, like, a soul. He doesn't have a, you know, that integrity. I feel like that's been ritualized away from him.
Huh.
And I just feel, I look at vacant eyes with all the money in the world, and I just think, would I want to be funny? If the choice is between funny or successful,
yeah,
I think I would always choose funny.
Yeah, definitely.
If that was a binary choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know. But I always think, like, wouldn't just, like, my worldly success from that day forward have been completely...
So you'd rather be truly funny than have just the perception? Because people think he's fucking hilarious for something. Like, people, you know, think he's hilarious.
I mean,
great.
It's shit. It's everything he says is shit. Yeah. It's not funny. Stephen Colbert is the least funny comic.
It's just
of all
chewed
time.
Up and spit out headlines. Trevor Noah, I think, is even worse.
I just think when I look at Stephen Colbert, I just think, oh, John Podesta and the CIA writes everything he says, and they're not funny. Why? Because they're creeps. when you're, like, fucking fisting goats in a Masonic lodge every day, and then you go in front of cameras and try to be normal,
it doesn't work.
There's something like, oh, he's very disturbed, but he's trying to say these jokes anyway. Like, that's just the vibe I get.
I mean, living a double life, sneaking around, never being able to show their family who they really are. And all the lies. Saying, I'm just working late, honey, when really, I'm meeting a bunch of men to do God knows what in a windowless hall.
Yeah? Yeah. He's a weirdo. There's a lot of them, though.
Yeah.
Like, when you take a step back and you look at people's lives, not just, like, their careers, you know? There's a lot.
I also want to say this, Amy Schumer came out with her movie Trainwreck, right? Which was shot up in some kind of false flag event. And then, like, her uncle is Chuck Schumer, who served 40 terms of Senate.
Yeah.
And is, like, just below Nancy Pelosi in the Democratic Party. So Chuck Schumer did help Amy Schumer's career behind the scenes. And this sort of Project Mockingbird which has been going on for a long time, where, you know, the news anchors, you know, are all bought and paid for by the CIA and Project Mockingbird, which is disclosed.
Yeah.
They said around Watergate that they stopped doing it. No, they didn't. It's very obvious that this program is still going on for reasons we've discussed earlier. And then, like, when would I want to be a Mockingbird comic that has no ability to say what they want because there's, you know, pictures of me in a Masonic ritual doing unspeakable acts that they're holding over me?
Yeah. You don't want to be that guy. You want to be free to talk.
Yeah. So what's the point of having success if you don't have integrity?
You're right.
But that's why I wonder about you. Like, if you went in, you know, and they gave you a blood test and it came back, you know,
pure blood Rothschild.
Pure blood Rothschild, they might be, you know, you might have a little bit more say. I don't know.
And I have no problem doing it, you know? So I'd be down for that.
Yeah?
I'd give it a try. I'd give it a try. If I didn't like it, I would drop out, you know? I've already dropped out of college. I could drop out of something else.
Oh, but I don't know. It's hard. I don't think they're getting a lot of new members, you know, with the Epstein case. Like, there's a Freemasonic temple on Epstein Island. I think a lot of people are going, and with Tom Hanks
getting exposed. Is there really? There's a Masonic temple on
you
Epstein.
You didn't know that?
Oh, is that what that temple is? The
yes.
big one? Oh, okay, that's Masonic.
How do I know? Because I saw images from inside, and yeah. the inside is a Masonic, like, so every Masonic temple, you stand between two pillars with bulbs on it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two bulbs on top of two pillars where the initiate stands between
yeah.
what's called Boaz and Yachim. Mm-hmm. Boaz is fire. Yachim represents ice.
Uh-huh.
So you have the... That's why they stand on a checkerboard, black and white, good and evil.
Uh-huh.
They think that they run the binary duality. They can run the Republicans and the Democrats. They run good and evil.
Uh-huh.
They run the Catholic Church and they run the OTO. They
gotcha.
Run Satanism and Jesus.
Yeah, and yeah.
That is the religion of Freemasonry, this binary, right? So the initiate stands between two pillars. Now, when you look at inside of the Epstein Island, that is what it... That is, it's
what
the
it
setup
is.
Of the initiatory floor pattern. Everything is of Freemasonry.
Huh.
And when you go to any police station in America, there are... At the threshold of the door, you will see two pillars with two bulb lights on top.
Yeah.
Representing Boaz and Yochim.
Huh.
And a lot of Masons, especially, or a lot of police, especially in New Jersey, have to be Masons.
Have to be?
Or, and the Fraternal Order of the Police is a branch of Masonry. It is a branch of Masonry. So when you go through your Fraternal Order of the Police... degrees,
yeah.
that is the first 3 degrees of Masonry. There's no difference.
Huh.
Anyway. That's why I wanted to have you on my podcast.
That's interesting.
Why? Where can people find...
They can find me
Luke
on the
Rothschild.
Internet at Luke Rothschild Comedy on the Facebook and on the Instagram.
Do you have your own website, Luke?
I don't, but I will soon, and I will keep you in tune with that. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do, erichollerbach.com. And if you click stand-up special, my full first three stand-up specials are there. Conspiracies and Dick Chicks, Fart Porn and Beer Hall, and It's a Medical Device. Also, I have another audio album called Lost Bits and Crowd Work, which is available only through my website for $5 per download.
Wow.
So, and also you can see the first place I saw Luke Rothschild in John McGinley's episode 25, Johnny the Neighbor.
What's up, buddy?
Hey, what's up,
what's fucking
man?
Going on? What did you do? To Sinema! What did you do? This is how you treat our women, isn't it? You don't give a shit.
So I put her in a box!
You put her arms in there,
she has long arms.
And now you're gonna put her torso here. You have to turn yourself in. You have to turn yourself in.
I thought
you're gonna put our entire company at risk.
You can. I'm not proud of it, but you can see me there, and you can see me on the Roth Files. That's my podcast.
Oh wow!
The Roth Files with Luke Rothschild. where we talk fun things and conspiracies. It's on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have guests? I'll be a guest.
Yeah, I'll be on as a guest. That'd be a good time. It's a video podcast, and we're happy to have you.
Let's do it.
Sweet.
All right. This has been episode, I believe, 268. What did I say?
268. 268. That sounds like right.
With Luke Rothschild. That's another episode of Highway Diary in the bag. Thanks to my guest, Luke Rothschild.
Thanks for having me.
LukeRothschild.com. Bye, motherfuckers.